Hey, welcome to Your Term. Mike Causey, delighted to have you with us. We're going to have a very interesting show today. We're going to be talking with George McCubbin. He is the head of the Border Patrol Association with the American Federation of Government Employees. And then we're going to talk to our friends at the Federal Times about a variety of things, including a new early retirement offer at the Social Security Administration. But first, on the line from California, we have George McCubbin. George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Good morning.
Listen, thank you so much. I know you're on Pacific time, so it's the crack of dawn for you, and we appreciate having you. Listen, I think probably most people in America know that, you know, we have a border patrol, but I bet very few people, myself included, understand what it is, what it does.
Okay, yeah, just for a quick correction, mm-hmm. I'm actually in Arizona.
Arizona, okay.
Yeah, I kept my old number from California when
okay.
I moved out here.
All right, so what about the Border Patrol? Is it, I mean, how big is it, where is it, and what does it do?
Well, personally, I've been in since 1985, so I've seen a lot of changes over the years. We currently are at about 21,000 nationwide, and we cover the entire southern border, all of the northern border, including the coastal states, which we consider from Louisiana all the way over to Florida. We also have one station in Ramey, Puerto Rico, as well.
Okay, now, Border Patrolman, I think I see a guy, a Marlboro man, on a horse riding the border between Texas and Mexico or Arizona or New Mexico and Mexico. What's it really like?
Well, that's not too far from the truth, to be honest. Although nowadays we do have a lot more technology than we've had in the past, but we still, in certain areas, rely on working with our horses. We have motorcycles, we have quads, we have our 4x4 vehicles. Although, you know, we're in a more modern era, Border Patrol agents still rely on foot traffic, you know, to be able to determine how many illegal entries have come in and figure out a route, a path that they're taking, and to be able to follow that foot sign, basically, to determine if they are, you know, still in the country or if they've been picked up or smuggled further into the United States.
So you've got everything, I guess, literally from trackers to presumably drones, huh?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, we run the whole gamut here. That wasn't the way in the past, but it has been over the last few years. I guess Congress recognized that we were understaffed, you know, outmanned, and so they've been able to give us plenty of money to make, you know, our agency run a little bit better, at least for the folks out in the field.
Now, your duties, you know, you patrol the border, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means. Where do you interdict with customs and other federal agencies?
Well, that kind of varies by location. You know, our northern border agents, they typically will interact more with the customs and border protection folks at the ports of entry. For the folks on the southern border, that doesn't happen too often. A lot is dependent on the terrain and the area that you're assigned to. And then with other agencies, that really varies on the person that you have under arrest. Kind of, you know, if we have narcotics involved, if there's a smuggling operation involved, task forces. So it kind of varies. You know, we interact with a lot of different agencies at every level, county, city, state, and other federal agencies as well.
That's interesting. I would suspect most people like me think that what you're doing is looking for illegal immigrants, but in fact you are. Are you 1811 federal officers?
No, we are 1896.
Okay, but you have the authority to arrest and carry weapons and all that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, we are a federal law enforcement officer, and we do that by the thousands. Although last couple of years the arrest numbers are down, but there's a lot of reasons for that. But back in the day we used to make over 1,000 arrests in a typical shift, because we do work a 24/7 operation. So we've got agents coming and going at all the stations all the time.
Roughly how many stations are there? Again, I'm thinking of the Mexican border.
Well, I think nationwide we're probably, if I remember the last number, was about 120 stations nationwide, of which the majority of them are on the southern border.
Okay, and you said at one point they were making 1,000 arrests a shift, so that would be, 3,000 a day?
Correct, yeah. And this was back in the late 80s, early 90s. Back when the border was just completely out of control.
Yeah. Well, we also hear that because of the economy here and the fact that things are improving so much in Mexico, that a lot fewer people are actually coming in as illegal immigrants.
Well, what's happening is in the past, we used to get, the illegal alien traffic would come in, but then they would go home during the winter months when there was no work here in the United States for them to find. What we're seeing a lot more over the last few years is once they make that illegal entry, and if they make it to wherever their final destination is, they tend to stay. They're not going back and forth anymore. A large part of that is the economy. Another part of it is that in certain areas, the Border Patrol has been more effective. Not completely shut down by any means, but in certain areas we do have better control of the traffic coming in.
Well, when you make a narcotics arrest, you're talking about, I guess, potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars here. There was an arrest made in Dulles Airport the day before yesterday, and I think they were talking about the street value of cocaine. Some people were smuggling cocaine in the chocolate milk containers, and they were talking about several million dollars in just one of these containers alone. So you're talking about big bucks when you're talking about drug smuggling, correct?
Correct. Oh, yeah, definitely. Our folks out here, they encounter more marijuana than they do cocaine. Most of the drug traffickers, they usually carry, they come in backpacks of about 50 pounds, and there could be, half a dozen up to a dozen of them coming in at one time. We typically, when we make arrests out here, we're talking about hundreds of pounds of marijuana at one time.
What would be the street value of somebody with, a backpack of 50 pounds of marijuana?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe marijuana is still at about $800 a pound.
So times 50, that's a good day's work there. And you said you're in Arizona now?
Correct, yeah. I'm assigned to the Casa Grande station in the Tucson sector.
Okay, so now you're going in, and we appreciate you getting up early for this interview. You're going in a few minutes. What's a typical day like for you, assuming there is a typical day?
For me, obviously it varies on the shift, that I'm assigned to. But, for the average agent, you typically try to find out what your assignment will be so you can prepare for that. And what I mean by that is some of the areas that we're assigned to are desolate. There's no restaurants, there's no Circle K, no 7-Eleven. You need to prepare for your entire day and bring that with you when you go to work. You need to make sure that you have all your equipment with you. And then once you get to your duty station, we have what we call a muster, roll call, basically. And the shift supervisor will go over the assignments, assign you your mode of transportation, your assigned area. They'll cover any information that is of importance that may have occurred the day before or the night before. So this way you're not really surprised when you get out to your area. A lot of the agents will check. We have a bunch of ground sensors out in the area that will alert us that there's traffic in certain areas. So they'll review the reports from the night before and make a determination if they may have some activity. Most because of the desert out here is very brutal, more so in the summertime. So the illegal alien traffic that comes in tends to move at night. During the day, they will basically set up camp somewhere and try to get some rest, get out of the heat, try to find some shade. So, you know, a lot really depends on the shift you're on is what type of activity you're going to be doing that day.
Sounds like a very interesting day, and as you point out, the cafeteria is not open for most people. Need to take a short break here. I'm talking with George McCubbin of the Border Patrol Council of the American Federation of Government Employees. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
Today is the day to make the switch to decide you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. I checked my alarm monitoring bill, and wow, I made the switch to Ackerman with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month. Now I save $25 a month. That's $300 a year.
Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drum roll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. The nation's largest intelligence event returns to Orlando, Florida, October 8th through 11th. USGIF's GEOINT 2012 Symposium features speakers from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities, as well as panel discussions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting our national security. Network with professionals and uncover new technologies from more than 250 organizations. Register and learn more at GEOINT2012.com. That's GEOINT2012.com.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Talking with George McCubbin. He is president of the American Federation of Government Employees Border Patrol Council. Did I get that right, George?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And you said at the beginning of the show that there were about, 12,000 Border Patrol officers, personnel?
No, we have probably nationwide about 21,000.
Okay. I reversed.
17,000 of them are in our bargaining unit.
Okay. All right, 21,000 total, and that's to patrol a huge area, the Mexican border and the Canadian border, and you mentioned you had an outpost in Puerto Rico and then in some of the Gulf states.
And our coastal states as well.
Yeah,
correct.
So that's a lot of stuff. Now, I guess when you're talking, as soon as you're talking, if you're talking about illegal aliens, that's one thing. They may see you, they may run away. I guess in some cases they'll put up a fight, but in most cases they're a lot more scared than you are. But when you encounter drug smugglers, it's a whole new ball game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and that is true. But just to back up a bit, human smuggling has become quite lucrative. In the past, most of the illegal aliens that we did encounter, were passive and, would give up. But nowadays, we're finding that that's not always the case because there's a lot of money on the line here. These folks either paid out a lot of money or the smuggler is a part of this group and he's not going to get paid unless he gets his illegal aliens to wherever they need to get to. So, it's our agents need to be basically on alert, the entire shift that they're out there.
Well, you read about cases of people from, I think most of us think of this as coming from Mexico and being Mexicans, but in many cases these are people from Central American countries who make it to Mexico, make it to the U.S. border, and then hook up with, is a coyote a correct term?
Coyotes. Correct.
Coyotes, okay, and this is the guy that gets you across the border.
Correct, yeah. The majority of our illegal alien traffic is from Mexico, but, on a regular basis, we do encounter several folks from other countries. And the farther the country is from the United States, the more they pay these coyotes to get them across and through the desert. Unfortunately, some of these coyotes get paid up front, so they will get their illegal aliens across the border, and then they basically abandoned them. And, hopefully that we will encounter them and get them out of that desert.
Once they've been paid, they don't care, huh?
Correct.
What kind, do you have any intelligence on the other side of the border or at the border? I mean, do you have people that know there are known coyotes and that they watch them, they monitor them, they try to turn them?
Yeah, I mean, we keep records of obviously everybody we arrest. So when we encounter someone multiple times, especially in the same area, we tend to focus a little bit more on that individual because more than likely they are the guide or the coyote. Because, like I said, most of these folks that do come in tend to stay. So if you get a repeat offender, more than likely he's the guide. But there are several, you know, just like we have the drug cartels, there are smuggling organizations as well. So they, you know, we just try to stay one step ahead of them when we can.
Yeah, this is something you may not know, but I've always wondered. You see it in movies, and I'm sure it happens in reality from time to time. You see it on America's Most Wanted. But an American will, for instance, enter Mexico illegally. You know, it's the reverse of this. They sneak in. They may be carrying, in this case, guns, which are harder to get in Mexico, maybe drugs in reverse, or maybe there for some reason. What happens, do you know, when the Mexicans capture an American who's entered the country illegally? I mean, are they treated the way we treat illegal immigrants here?
No. I mean, just from what I've, some of the stories I've read were some of these folks committed certain crimes and stuff. My understanding of the process in Mexico is, which is ironic, but they're a lot stricter for folks doing illegal activities in their country than we are here. I mean, for the most part, you know, when we encounter someone and, you know, their sole crime is that they're here without the proper documentation, you know, we will put them into the system, computer system, fingerprint them, photograph them, and then make arrangements to get them back into Mexico. So for the most part, they may be here for a couple hours or a few hours, depending on the time of the day and the location that they're apprehended. They could be here a few days just.
Yeah,
depending on making the arrangements to get him back.
Well, I was talking to a DE agent who was stationed in Mexico. He was in Juarez for a while, and he said that they are much tougher. They don't read him their rights if they catch an illegal immigrant. They don't necessarily take great care in feeding them or housing them, and that they can be pretty rough on them. And it's not a desirable thing to try to smuggle into a country like that.
Correct, yeah. I mean, we're required to you know, give them some type of food and beverage, depending on the length of their stay with us. You know, so I'm not going to say it's the five-star hotel that they're temporarily being held in, but, you know, they do have running water and they have restroom facilities. And
well, I guess if you've been in the
seeking medical attention, we get that to them
as
well.
If you've been in the desert for a night or two, I guess anything looks good to you. What's the situation with there must be these coyotes and particularly the drug people that are always trying to bribe federal agents. I know every agency is on the alert for it, and there were congressional hearings this week. How do you cope with that?
Anytime an agent is, you know, arrested for some type of a corruption case, it makes all of us look bad. I mean, we don't, you know, it sickens me every time I hear, you know, that an agent, you know, assisted in smuggling, you know, was helping passing drugs into our country. You know, we don't tolerate it and we don't care for it. It's unfortunate that it does happen. A large part of that has to do with, you know, we hired a lot of people in a record, you know, in a short time period. And I don't think all the proper background checks were conducted on these folks. You know, we were told that we had to hire a large number. And, you know, I think a lot of the bad apples, you know, slipped through. And hopefully we can get these folks weeded out before they commit any more illegal activity.
Well, I think that came out of these congressional hearings that were this week and last week, and they were talking about that particular period where they rushed so many people in, and the number of bad apples they found was high. But they said now it is back to normal levels, and a relatively small percentage of people are found to be doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I believe that to be true because, you know, we haven't done the hiring the last couple of years, and I think the agency has caught up with these background investigations, and it doesn't seem to be near the numbers that it was at one time. But like I said, even one is bad for us.
George, we've got to wrap it up here, but if I wanted to be, I guess I'm a little long in the tooth for this, but if I wanted to be a Border Patrol agent, what would it take?
What would it take to become a Border
yes.
Patrol agent?
Right.
Well, I mean, you would go to usajobs.gov. Actually, I believe we have an opening, or we have openings now, but you would apply, submit your application, then you would be notified through the mail of a written exam. You need to take a written exam. A part of that written exam is your ability to learn a foreign language, which in this case would be Spanish. You're not required to know Spanish.
But it helps.
Get the job, yeah. But you are required to know it in order to graduate. Because unlike a lot of other jobs where you submit your application, you do an interview, and then you're hired. For us, it's a little different because you actually, after you get the results back from the written test, you have to go and do a basically a physical agility test. You have to go through an oral interview well before you're accepted into the academy. And then if you make it to that point, then the academy currently is located in Artesia, New Mexico.
George, got to cut it off here. That sounds like a fascinating life. I hope we inspired some people to do it. Thank you, George McCubbin, for coming on. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back talking with the Federal Times guys about, among other things, early retirement.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
This is J.J. Green. The U.S. Army is the main branch of the U.S. Armed Forces. The highest-ranking officer is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. The regular Army has 562,000 soldiers. The Army National Guard has 362,000, and the U.S. Army Reserve has 205,000, putting in the combined component strength at 1.1 million soldiers. If you have a story about the Army you'd like to share, send me an email at jgreen@wtop.com.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, August 12th, we'll be out of town. Woo-hoo! So we're going to give you a best of Foodie and the Beast. You'll get to hear all the fun foodie facts going on around the D.C. metro area.
That's next Sunday right here on 1500 a.m. at 11. It's Foodie and the Beast.
Diary entry. August 15th, my joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd, I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Casts, of course, immobilize broken limbs while they heal. But there's usually collateral damage to healthy muscle that's weakened by also being forced to sit idle. An experimental cast would be custom fitted in puzzle-like pieces held together by locking devices that doctors could detach at various stages of healing and...
By choosing which pieces they want to remove, can allow your bones to stay mobilized as desired, but let your muscles move in certain directions.
Kelly Anderson, a University of Virginia engineering student who co-invented the puzzle cast, hopes this will increase blood flow, reduce soreness, and speed recovery for a wide variety of broken bones.
Fractures have slightly different healing mechanisms, so you can customize it based on a particular type of fracture.
Anderson's team is working with surgeons and physical therapists to perfect the puzzle cast. She says it could be available in a couple years. To find out more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. We're going to be catching up on the latest news, talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Riley. They're senior writers for the Federal Times, and they're standing in their studio today. Gentlemen, are you with us?
We're here.
Good morning. Good. Listen, hey, first thing, clear the deck with your breaking story about the early retirement offer at Social Security.
That's right. The Social Security Administration on Monday, they offered as many as 9,000 employees early retirements. Now, of course, not everybody is going to take that, but it is a sizable chunk that is getting that option, almost 14% of the agency's workforce. Now, it should be noted that they're not offering buyouts, just early retirements. And if you do take the voluntary early retirement, you have to be out by September 30th. But it's a sign that all is not well at the Social Security Administration. They've already had a 6% cut in their staffing last year, which already forced it to lean on overtime, and then when the money started to kind of run out for overtime, they started closing field offices to the public a half hour early. Now, what's especially alarming about these early retirements is that the commissioner, Michael Astrew, he told the Senate Finance Committee back in May that he was expecting more cuts to come this year and next year, and that would force the agency to cut its hours even further next year. And they're also struggling with a claims backlog that could grow even worse, perhaps several thousand more employees. So anyway, that's something that's going on. It's a definite cause for alarm for the people who are concerned about the government agencies like the SSA's ability to get their job done.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. One is that we're always told in Washington that the Social Security is the third rail of American politics, and that is if you touch it, you die. It's politicians are supposed to shy away from it, and yet they're cutting the budget and at this very basic service for some of the most politically active and some of the most anxious people in the country. And the other thing, it seems to me, in the past, when you offer early retirement without a buyout, that your take rate is extremely low, something like 7% of the eligibles.
That's interesting. I hadn't seen those numbers, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are a lot of people who might be interested in a buyout who kind of yawn at a voluntary early retirement.
Right. If everything, all things being equal, they say, yeah, I'll go. I'd take the buyout. But just to leave early, particularly in an economic time like this, I think the buyouts may be coming down the road, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the deal now on the Postal Service defaulted, and yet the sun rose? What does this mean?
Amazing. Well, it basically means the Postal Service defaulted and the sun rose. Mm-hmm. This was essentially a transfer payment to another government fund. So there's no immediate impact, but I think it's, obviously a huge canary in the coal mine for the Postal Service's overall financial condition that it couldn't make this payment. They're set to release their third quarter financial results tomorrow, and those probably won't be good. And then in October, they're supposed to make about a $1.4 billion payment to the Labor Department to cover workers' comp claims. And there's some question about whether the Postal Service can fully cover that without going into the red.
I've been getting a number of emails from people who say they're thinking about retiring. They're planning ahead. They're getting their nest egg so they can pay their bills till their interim payment comes. But you guys are finding that OPM is improving the processing situation, right?
That's right. The OPM the other day released their latest stats on retirement claims processing. This is, as your readers know, a long-standing problem in the federal government. Basically, OPM for decades has had trouble getting people's pensions processed and getting their full annuity out to them in a timely manner. Sometimes it takes 6 months, sometimes it takes 8 months. Some people have come to me and said, I've been waiting for more than a year for my full pension. So they have to make do on a pension that may be half of what they're owed. Some dip into their TSP, some dip into their savings. It causes a lot of hardship for a lot of retirees. Now, in January, OPM announced their new strategy, and they said we're gonna tackle this once and for all. And part of that included several new process improvements. Part of it included hiring 56 new specialists that can process more claims. And OPM all along has said it's going to take us. They started hiring them in the beginning of the year. They said these guys aren't going to be fully up to speed until July. Well, what do you know? July came and went, and there was a notable increase in the number of cases that they processed last month. 2,800 cases more than the monthly average for the first half of the year. And OPM said all along, we expect these new people who we hired are going to allow us to process about 3,000 more cases per month. So, let's keep a skeptical eye on OPM, but the preliminary results from the first 6 months of Director John Barry's new strategy are looking pretty good.
Well, in this television age, too, when on every crime show somebody with a computer solves every situation and runs down every lead in minutes, the bottom line for the retirement process is this is largely a paperwork trail, isn't it?
That's right. The government for decades and decades has been building up just a number of different systems around the government, around agencies. It's relying largely on paper processes. They've been trying to digitize it with little success over the last couple of years. So, yeah, a large part of this is still a pen and paper process. And one of the things that has been hamstringing OPM's efforts to process these pensions is agencies submit incomplete case files. And they're trying to address this. They sent out guidance to agencies last Friday. It said, here's how you put together a better package of all the papers we need. And they said that the number one biggest problem that is causing them to have to bounce these packages back to other agencies is they're not including Federal Employees Health Benefits Program records proving that these people were covered by FEHBP for the 5 years necessary for them to qualify for health coverage in retirement.
And boy, that's critical, too, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Insurance for life. Just before the Congress went on its latest vacation, the leadership worked out a deal, a continuing resolution that will allow the government to run at its current funding levels through, I guess, March, 6 months. What does that mean?
That means basically that it lessens the risk of a highly controversial, highly politicized government shutdown right before the election. But the downside is, which is good, but the downside is it just kind of kicks the can down the road, which is what Congress is very good at these days. They don't actually solve problems. They just say, let's wait for another couple of months and we'll think about it tomorrow.
That's right. It's not a Republican or a Democratic thing. They've been doing it for decades now. Need to take a short break, and when we come back, I'd like to ask you about what agencies are going to do with this prospect of long-term tight budgets. Be right back.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government.
Please contact them at advancedalliant.com for potential small business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Every day, hundreds of dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens become homeless in our region, suffering from neglect, abuse, hoarding situations, and victims of illegal puppy mills. These innocent animals who want a home and a loving family are at risk, but now you can help. Join the Washington Animal Rescue League for their second annual Adopt-a-thon on Saturday, August 11th from noon till 5 at their state-of-the-art facility located at 71 Oglethorpe Street in Northwest D.C. More than 150 rescued dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens that need forever homes will be available for adoption. They're offering pay-what-you-will adoption fees to allow everyone an opportunity to adopt. Their veterinarians will answer questions at the Ask the Vet table, and their certified dog trainers will host demonstrations, and area pet-friendly organizations will be on site with goodies for everyone. Meet your perfect match Saturday, August 11th from noon till 5. Visit warl.org/adopt. Adopt-a-thon.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
This is Mark Amtower.
For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Sean Riley and Stephen Losey of the Federal Times, and going to get back into the budgets. But before that, I want to ask you, it looks like as if postmasters may be on the endangered species list.
Full-time ones sure are. I mean, the Postal Service, they're about, as of earlier this year, there are about 21,000 career postmasters. The Postal Service wants to eliminate more than half of those positions, replace many of them with what they call postmaster's relief, which are part-time jobs, for which the pay is much lower. And speaking of buyouts, early outs, we just got some numbers earlier this week from the Postal Service about how postmasters had responded to the buyout offer that was made in May. And you had about 4,000, so close to 20% of those who were working as of earlier this year are going to be leaving by the end of September. Most have already left, as a matter of fact. Their last day was end of July.
Now, the Postal Service isn't doing the $25,000 buyouts, is it?
A lot of people wish they were. Now, there seems like their upper limit is $20,000. That's what postmasters got. And then they're offering $15,000 to mail handlers. And the Postal Service is having informal discussions with the American Postal Workers Union, which represents clerks, maintenance folks, people who work in the processing plants. But that is the issue of offering buyouts or early retirements to those employees has apparently gotten snarled in a separate dispute over whether the Postal Service is complying with all aspects of the contract the APW signed last year. But there are certainly a lot of members, at least from the emails I get, who are very interested and getting very impatient for some kind of agreement on a buyout to be reached.
Yeah, I saw your story and the fact that former President Bill Burris had sort of jumped into the fray, too.
Yeah, this isn't the first time he's done that. And I'm sure his former coworkers still at APW really appreciate it. But last year, he has a blog, and last year he came out in opposition to ratification of the contract that was approved back in May of 2011, partly on the grounds that it set up a two-tier wage system that makes a distinction between current postal workers and those who are hired after a certain date.
Okay. I was looking at this new TSA contract, or rather looking at stories about it. I have not read it. But were uniforms one of the big issues?
Yeah, that was one of the big things that TSA and the American Federation of Government Employees settled in the first ever collective bargaining agreement for about 45,000 airport security screeners. The contract that they've agreed to would increase screeners' annual uniform allowance from $232 to $446. Also, it would let them wear uniform shorts when it's hot. Certainly in some states like Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, it will undoubtedly get very hot. And that's something that they had been wanting. It also lets them wear athletic shoes or other alternative shoe options in some cases, and it reduces some of the restrictions on tattoos. So that was one of the big things. But I think the biggest thing that is notable in this contract is the issue of the performance management system. There was the Performance Accountability and Standards System, which is a pay-for-performance system that AFGE despised. They said it was discriminatory. They said it was a poor measure of performance. And they, in the negotiations with TSA, they got TSA to agree to kill, pass, and replace it by a new program that they're calling TOPS. Now, there are very few details out now about exactly what this new system is going to be and how it's going to work. We're trying to find some more information out about that. But it's going to, if this contract is ratified by the TSA screeners, it's going to mean a major change in how they are evaluated and how they are paid.
Well, yeah, being a TSA screener has got to be one of the toughest jobs in government. You're standing around. You're meeting people who are in a hurry. They're tired. They're irritable. And you have to go through the screening process, and not everybody likes it.
Yeah, that's right. It's no fun for anybody, and the criticism of TSA has been pretty intense over the last 2 years or so, especially. with some of the increased pat downs, the increased body scanning, things like that. So yeah, it's rough times for TSA screeners these days. So AFGE is hoping that this new contract is going to at least lighten the load on them a little bit.
And you can see the quote, little things mean a lot. Things like footwear and more money for uniform allowances, which is really a big deal to people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hey, on the question, the House has approved 7 budgets. The White House has said it will veto 6 of them. The Senate has approved nothing. So we've got this continuing resolution, which presumably the House and the Senate will approve when they get back, and then that would let the government run through March. And at the same time, we have the shadow of sequestration coming in. What does all this mean? Where are we?
Well, sequestration is the big disaster that everyone agrees is a disaster. They all agree it's coming, but nobody seems to actually be doing anything about it. Congress had hearings the last couple of weeks with where they brought people like Jeff Zients from OMB, and everyone agrees, boy, this sure would stink. And we, you know, sequestration never really was intended to go into place. It was actually supposed to kind of put a gun to Congress's head and force them to come to an agreement on deficit reduction. Well, guess what? They didn't, and they can't come to any agreement on how to do that or avoid sequestration or what. So basically, we are looking at $109 billion in budget cuts, more or less half from defense, half from non-defense, that are going to go into effect January 2nd. It's going to mean it could cost 270,000 federal employees their jobs. It could, we could be looking at hiring freezes, furloughs, staffing reductions at DOD, FBI, Border Patrol, TSA, FAA, could have their efforts to ensure safe air travel cut. National parks could be closed, severe cuts to National Weather Service forecasting. There is just no limit to the amount of bad news that could come with the sequestration. But Congress, in their infinite wisdom, is completely incapable of shelving, of putting differences aside and coming to some kind of a sensible agreement. The hearing last week between Republican lawmakers and Zients of OMB kind of descended into a partisan shouting match, with one side accusing the other of messing things up and being more partisan. It was kind of a disheartening scene, to be honest, Mike.
Well, they're playing political chicken, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
And if I could chime in very quickly, while we're talking about sequestration, President Obama yesterday signed what's called the Sequestration Transparency Act, which essentially gives the administration a month to provide a detailed accounting of all the accounts, all the programs, activities, et cetera, that would be affected by sequestration and the amount that it's anticipated each would be cut. So that'll be out presumably at the beginning of September and or near the beginning of September, and could certainly intensify the focus on what the impact of this would be.
Good. Well, plenty of work for us ahead. Thank you, folks. Thank you for being with us. I'm glad you tuned in today. Remember, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.